Welcome to NACSW's Podcast of the Month. Our podcast program makes available recordings of a wide variety of NACSW presentations and discussions on topics of particular interest to Christians in social work. Our Podcast of the Month program features a new podcast every 30 days for your listening pleasure. We hope you enjoy today's podcast.
Welcome to our one-hour CEU presentation being sponsored by NACSW, North American Association of Christians in Social Work. Our presentation today will be by Julie Griffin, MSW and MSG. Her presentation today will be on navigating end-of-life issues with clients, an overview for social workers.
Thank
Julie?
You.
Thank you.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
End-of-life issues. First thing people think about is death. There's a lot to do with end-of-life issues. Actually, any life stage change. Once you become an adult, marriage, children, buying a home, retirement, every new stage in our lives, there's planning that needs to be done. There's documentation. There's a lot to think about. But when we talk about end of life, we're actually encompassing our whole life and how we're going to plan for it. And if we don't know how to do it for ourselves, it makes it even more difficult to help our clients and patients navigate through the process when they're already in a crisis mode. Those of you here today are with the North American Christians in Social Work. And I want to share with you everything that I share with all social workers, all service providers. But I do want to share a little bit of scripture with you. As we all know, God is a God of order, the Creator. And His Word, the Holy Bible, it is a book of preparation. It talks about how He prepared the world, how He prepared for us, and He gives us very clear instructions about how we are supposed to prepare for our futures as well. So moving beyond procrastination, most people know they need to get things in order. Get your house in order. Get stuff in order. We don't want to be at the end of life and someone says, you've got 6 months or less. Get your affairs in order. And you're going to go, oh. Well, it's a shock getting the news that there may be a medical problem. But the idea, the daunting task that we think is a daunting task of getting everything together is, oh. And we've all known from the time we were 18 years old that we need to keep track of things. We need to let our family know where they can find passwords. We need to let our family know what accounts we have. There's so much we need to share with our children and pass on to the next generation. So the information I want to share with you today, it's not just for what we're going to do with our clients. First, let's talk about how it's going to affect us. And why do we procrastinate? Why do we have this sensitivity about end-of-life issues? We're like a death-defying culture. We don't want to talk about death in this culture. Even though it's all around us, hospice is much more popular nowadays. It's a part of our vocabulary. We know that there's numerous websites out there to help us put everything together. We're all tech-savvy, and we know with the click of a button, we can go on the internet and find out any information that we're interested in. But let's kind of explore just a little bit and kind of demystify some of these personal fears that most of us, if not all of us, have had at some point in time. Even myself, I have been in the hospice field for almost 8 years now. I work with death and dying and the fears around it on a regular basis. But even for myself, with everything I know, there's more I know I could do to prepare myself and my family. So, just out of curiosity, does anybody want to share really quick any concerns they have? Is there any particular fear, or have you had a client mention anything? Does anybody wish to share?
I do.
Sure.
I have a patient right now who had a stroke on Thursday, so please lift him up in prayer. And he has a brother, but he was incompetent and could not fill out an advance health care directive.
That is a huge concern. And advanced health care directives, as well as psychiatric health care directives, is something we're going to be talking about in this session today. Thank you for sharing that with us. In the Holy Bible, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 35, cast all your anxieties and fears on him because he cares for you. He cares for me and you. And saying, yes, Lord, take it all. It doesn't fix the daily things we have to go through, the nitty-gritty things that we have to prepare for. There's navigating a host of other professionals, whether we're doing it for ourselves or we're assisting our clients and patients. There's attorneys. There are government agencies. There are medical providers. There's insurance companies. There's Social Security. There might be the VA. And there could be other agencies or organizations that are involved in someone's life that we may need to do a little bit of research and maybe some intervention, maybe some advocacy for. So you mentioned an advanced health care directive. Every single state has advanced health care directives. And I think most people became acutely aware of it because of very high-profile, newsworthy events like Terry Schiavo.
Sure, right, yeah.
Thank you. In Florida. Because one state may say, this is what end of life consists of, and another state may not. One state may say, your next of kin is your spouse, your parents, your children. Another state may have a little slightly different take on that. And so where you fill your advanced health care directive out, it'll follow you. But if you're going to move to another state or to another country, you may want to reconsider updating to what the norms and what the rules and the regulations and laws are in that area. Thank you. So an advanced health care directive, living will, a lot of terms. An advanced health care directive is an opportunity for us as individuals to say, this is what I want. This is what I need for me. I've given each of you a handout, and it has a lot of information on it. And the very first page talks about a website called the Conversation Project. The Conversation Project helps individuals and families and organizations get that conversation going. One of the things that they really hone in on is we believe that the place to have the end-of-life discussion is at your kitchen table, not in the ICU ward when there's a crisis and an emergency. It all needs to be known in advance. A good place to start might be writing a letter to yourself, sending a note card to a family member and say, you know, I just recently had a neighbor pass away, and it got me to thinking about what I might want for myself. Just an icebreaker to open up the conversation. When you start the conversation, you may find your spouse, your parents, your siblings, your children and grandchildren, they might have a different idea about what they think you want because they're going on their own desires, their own preconceived ideas, and their own fears. So it's good to get that conversation out, and because others disagree with you, it's good that you know it. You might want to keep having the conversation, keep bringing it up, sticking that information in there somewhere. You might want to write down a couple things and just kind of stick it in your wallet with your ID until you're ready to formalize. On the internet, there are tons and tons of websites that help you get the conversation started. And I found the Conversation Project to be the most interesting one. At the bottom of your handout on this first page, it talks about the conversation starter kit, and there's a link there. And I will be emailing each of you all of the resources, so you can just click the links and not have to type everything in. But too many people are dying in a way that they personally would not have chosen had they had opportunity and forethought and planned and put it in writing and made others aware of what they really do want and what they don't want. So we want to get those wishes known. We don't want it to be ourselves, and we don't want it to be our loved ones. Anecdotally, I have a child that works in the medical profession, and she just assumes, as you know, a hospice is an ancillary medical profession, she just assumed that, for instance, if I were in a car accident, well, there'd be no problem intubating mom temporarily, just to get her through. Well, mom said, no. In my personal belief, the way I feel right now, I've got everything written down. Nice red envelope. Everybody has a red envelope. I've told my family, you don't have to worry about unplugging me, as the phrase goes. We get that from the news media and from the movie world, to unplug. I said, you don't ever have to plug me in. But mom, so this is a conversation that's been going for a few years for us. She's my eldest child. And so I just very calmly said, honey, if it's going to be hard for you to make a decision, because all an advance directive does is it gives you the legal right to advocate for what I have already chosen. You're not choosing anything new. All you have to do is stand between me and the doctors, between me and the lawyers, and say, this is what she said. Here it is. This is what she wants, and this is what she doesn't want. So, honey, it's not going to be your choice. I'm making the choice. Oh, she was so relieved to find out. I bet some of you didn't know that either. That advance directive, you name a primary agent and two subsequent agents if their first one isn't available. They're basically just your advocate, and they're taking that piece of paper, flying into the ICU ward, flying into the ER, talking to whoever they need to, and saying, here it is, here it is. This is what she said. This is what he wants. This is what they don't want. So that's really exciting to know that advance directive is not putting any additional pressure on you. So you might encounter family members or friends, coworkers that you say, hey, I would really like to list you as one of my agents. And they go, oh, I don't want that responsibility. Thank you, but no. You're not asking them to be the executor of your estate. This is much easier. And it does give you a legal right if the time comes and you go, I don't think I could hold up to that. So that's why it's good to have a second and a third person listed as your agent. Because the first person may not feel up to doing it themselves. They may have a crisis in their life at the time that it's needed. They may have some health problems of their own. It might cloud their own judgment. So then on this first page where we're talking about the conversation project, it says, have you had the conversation? It's all over their website. And they want to know, why is it important? 60% of the people they have polled said that they want to make sure that their family is not burdened with any tough decisions, and they think that it's very, very important. In fact, extremely important. 60% of the adults that have been surveyed. 56% have not had the conversation and explained their end-of-life wishes, even verbally, to anyone. But just saying it verbally isn't enough. In this day and age, we live in a litigious society. You have to put things in writing, even if you just handwrite it out. But the best thing to do, and it's free, is to do an advance healthcare directive. Here in the state of California, you can do one, have two witnesses that are not named individuals, people that are not related to you. They can sign it, fill it out, it's legal. You don't even have to pay for a notary.
Which is the best website to go to, Julie?
I've got tons of websites for you. This one's called The Conversation Project to help you figure out how to have the conversation. And they've got this starter kit with really cool questions. Very, very simple, fill in the blank. Very short, takes about 3 minutes. But remember, if you don't need to talk about it just yet, you can just think about it. That's what we want you to do, is start thinking about it. And this is what you can tell your clients and your patients. Even if they're in a crisis situation, you can share with them. You don't have to make a decision right this minute, but the sooner you do, the more you'll be relieved. Did you have a question?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Is the five wishes, does that carry, does that cover
yes.
everything?
And okay. I have their website listed also.
I have the form.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. Yes. Think about practicing the conversation with a friend. These conversations may be very revealing for you. On your second page of your handout, I have a list of, it's the beginning list actually, of online resources. And it may be in a, see, do we have you in, yes, online resources. So the next website that I find extremely useful for anyone here in the United States, it's called EverPlans, EverPlans.com. EverPlans is a secure website where you can put all, I mean all of your documentation. You can scan and download everything. And they have numerous, numerous guides that go state by state to help you figure out how to plan for any life event, whether it's having a new baby, whether it's newlyweds, whether it's retirement, but mostly end of life. The individuals that started this particular website are young, tech-savvy individuals that had some crisis in their own families, and they were at a loss trying to figure out what to do and where to put all this information and where to find information. Their website is extremely concise. It gives you a place where you can put all your essential documents. Each person that you give secure access to, they only can access the information you want them to have. So, your medical directives, your agents that have your advanced healthcare power of attorney, your medical power of attorney, that may be the only thing that they can access. Your spouse, or your children, or a parent, or a companion, you may want them to have access to some of your financial information. Passwords. Where to find safe deposit box key. Little things that are so common to our everyday life, we don't even realize how much connection we have to the outside world and how much information we're storing here. Most of us have at least a dozen passwords in our minds. And we might write them down somewhere. We probably should write them down somewhere because we could get stressed and have a lapse in memory. But I've given you also glossary. It came off the EverCare website that goes through just about any topic, any word that's part of the industry, whether it's legal or medical, that you might have a question about. Your insurance forms, they may have words that you have no idea what it means. You go, this must have been written by an attorney because it wasn't written for everyday people.
Because it probably was written by an attorney.
Yeah. There's another page of your online resources at the very top. It has the five wishes. Five wishes. Extremely popular. It is from a company, an agency, and their website is called Aging with Dignity. Now, each one of the websites that I've listed and that I'm going to forward it to you as far as your emails, and you can just click on, each one of them not only has a lot of information and how-tos, they all have toolkits, they all have planning guides, mapping guides to fit your specific needs. The one we just got through speaking about, the EverPlan, they have a starter kit. It's free. You can start up right up. If you want to use their full service where you're putting everything in the cloud there, $35 a year. I'm not advertising. But they are the most concise one I have found so far. But on their website, they have at least a dozen other organizations, and I've listed some of them here. My Directives, My Directives website, mydirectives.com. They are available worldwide, even for international users. They have forms in there that will help people that are traveling or that are moving to another country. The next one is Prepare for Your Care. What type of medical care do we or don't we want? I've shared with you my own personal beliefs about one thing. Now, next week I might change my mind. But as I feel today, other than maybe a nasal cannula, that's as far as I want to go. But all of us need to learn, what does it mean to be resuscitated? What does it mean to have artificial feeding? There's a broad spectrum within the medical community on both. It could be something very temporary, like a feeding tube that goes through your nose. Or it could mean surgery, where you have some type of a peg permanently in place, and you're going under anesthesia to have that surgery. And then you have to think for yourself, not what your family wants, not what your spouse wants, what you as an individual want. Do you think if you were that ill, would you want that type of a procedure? Same with respiration. Nasal cannula, oxygen concentrator, an oxygen tank, you have the oxygen around your ears. You can walk with it. You can go in the car. You can probably fly with it. But there's CPAPs and there's BiPAPs and there's all different levels of respirators. And so it takes a lot of concentration to think about. Do you have a question? Okay. Next website we have listed is bestendings.com. Now this one, they advertise end-of-life wishes, think, talk, learn, plan, and share. Great slogan. So today we're doing a little thinking about it. We're going to do a little talking about it. We're learning, and we're going to learn how to do it for ourselves so we can help others. Next website I've listed is Life Matters Media. This is a unique website. It's not just a how-to. It talks about the media in general. And how does the media fit into our lives as individuals, particularly when we're talking about our own lives now and in the future? It's a very unique website. I encourage everyone to just take a little peek at that one. Next website I've listed is called Good End of Life. Now, I want you to be aware, most of these websites, when you look at them, check out how they started, what their mission and vision is. You will find the majority of these websites have been started by individuals like yourselves. Had a life-changing experience. Someone very close to them, near and dear. Family, friend, neighbor, colleague, coworker. Something didn't go the way everybody expected it should have. And they're thinking, there's got to be an easier way to figure out how to do this and where to get the information. And so they started a little niche website that fit their specific need to help others, and it blossomed. The next website I have listed is called DeathWise. DeathWise does focus specifically on end of life, just like what most people think. End of life, you're on your way out. Let's face it, end of life is a part of life. And as unique as you guys are as individuals, your end of life is going to be just as unique. The way you die, the way you die, it's going to be the way you die. No one else is going to die that way. So we might as well participate. We are a people of choice. We were created that way, to make choices. We live in a society where we are fortunate enough that our government expects us to make choices. And if you don't make a choice, the government may make the choices for you. So at the very least, as adults, we want to make advanced healthcare directives. Another thing you might want to consider when we're thinking about legal wills, trusts, advanced healthcare directives, living wills, an ethical will. Have you heard the term? An ethical will. There's even a website for that. But Evercare plan has a kit on there. They have a very, very good guide, and they lay it out very nicely. It's worth looking at to get ideas about how to do it. But it's your personal story. What is you want to pass on? Do you want to pass on your faith values? Do you want to pass on your hopes and dreams for others? Do you want to explain why you've done what you've done in your life, why you've done what you've done as far as your legal will, the one that divides your assets and your property, and maybe even makes arrangements for minor children? Do you want to explain things to ease the burden and to ease people's feelings so they don't feel offended, so they're not surprised, so they go, oh, that's what she was thinking? It's a document that could be to detail your accomplishments in life. Like I said, to share your values. It's a way of leaving your family something that is meaningful. It could be for future generations. It may even leave some things that have little financial value, but they're emotionally, spiritually, or personally tangible. It could be photos, personal clothing.
Yay!
It's a way of passing on your life story.
Where do you find that again, Julie?
That one's on the Evercare plan, the Everplans. And actually, there's a lot of benefit in writing an ethical will now, while you're healthy, while there's no problems, while you're not thinking about planning for the end of life at all, to just kind of go through the process and write down and jot down what is important to me. Because people that are close to us, we think they know what we stand for. We think they understand what we believe and what we want. You put it in writing and you might surprise yourself is what you really do believe and think. And then share it with someone that's very close to you, a dear friend, a spouse, a parent, and they'll go, oh, I had no idea you felt this way. So we want to make sure people do understand. So an ethical will is something that is really, really special, and it's very, very personal. Recipes. There's a lot of history in recipes. In fact, there's tons of cookbooks that detail individuals' personal life experiences around recipes. Something that came from great-great-grandma back in the old country. Ethical wills are unique, and they are wonderful. Does anybody have any questions about any particular words around end of life? Anything that they've heard and they're not sure what it means? You've got 2.5 pages of glossary. Yes?
The whole idea of an ethical will sounds really incredible. I've read things that other people have written before they pass away, and that can be extremely meaningful and wonderful.
Yeah. And the moments of our life are not promised.
And people used to write a last will and testament, and it included pieces of that.
It did.
You know, when people were more important than things.
And those kind were usually done by very high-priced attorneys.
Yes.
a lot of legal jargon. Now,
the ones I've read were more personal, and the person was talking about values.
That was good.
You know, ethical wills.
Yeah. Here in California, where we're at today, you can do a holographic will. But that's where you just write things out in your own handwriting.
Oh, yeah.
However, there are several sites, most of them written by attorneys, or started. But there's legal reasons, because if you're not very specific in a holographic will, that you could leave too much ambiguity, and it could create more of a legal problem. Yes, ma'am.
Is there a way of recording, like on a video, recording your will? Can you talk about that for people who really don't feel like they can write well?
That can be done as well as a tape, but because of modern electronics, things can be altered, and so you still need something in writing. There are attorneys, particularly some elder care attorneys, that will actually audio tape their appointments with an older individual or someone that has a particular physical challenge, to make sure that everyone knows they weren't coerced in any way. So in the Advanced Healthcare Directive, you guys have a copy of the California one, and you're welcome to take that. I have extras if you want to take some to your friends and family. In the very first section, you name your agent, the first person, the number one person that you want to you know, to take that phone call and say, oh, I'm 600 miles away, but anything you need, just call me. I can do fax, I can do email. You know, I'm not able to come right now. It doesn't have to be someone that's physically in your community. It doesn't have to be a family member. It doesn't have to be anybody you know. If you think that somebody more objective is an attorney or someone, an agent from the bank or a friend, it doesn't have to be anybody immediately very close to you. But you'll name one person. I encourage everyone to list at least one more, if not both, the second and the third agent. And then you give the level of authority that they have. Is it starting now, immediately, or only when I can't speak for myself? Most advanced health care directives, legally, at least in the state of California, they don't even take effect unless the individual cannot speak for themselves. So, there's lots of possibilities. You fall and bump your head while you're out for your walk one afternoon. You stepped on a rock. At your grandchild's ball game, you get hit in the head. Pass out. You have a migraine. Go to the ER. They give you a shot. You pass out. There's tons of reasons we can't speak for ourselves temporarily. That's when we need the advanced health care directives, because you don't want the state government making decisions on your behalf. Yes, ma'am.
So I never understood why it said to take effect now, and I've always advised my patients to not to check that box. So now I understand. Thank you for clarifying.
Well, and also in that section, there's post-death authority.
Yes,
I
understand.
I personally, in hospice, at least once a year, I have had someone that is a single adult. They've outlived most of their immediate family, and they may have a family friend or a close companion or neighbor listed. But they only listed for medical. They didn't list anything in the post authority. So the mortuary will not work with them. The crematory may not work with them. The whole body donation company may not work with them if they know that there are legal family members somewhere on this earth. They have to go through a lot to try to contact those individuals, even if it's someone that you haven't even had contact with for the last 30 years. Do you want that person making decisions, even post-death? So we're not only talking about our life and our health now. What happens afterwards? Some individuals do not believe in cremation, and that's fine. There is no right or wrong. Some people believe that they want to give back ethically. They want a green cremation. They want a green ceremony in a cemetery and a green burial. Some people, they may have been a veteran for years, but they don't want to be buried at the VA like everybody just assumes they want to be. Some individuals want to give back either through whole body donation, anatomical donation through tissue bank, or organ donation. Well, a lot of people put that dot here in California on their driver's license,
right,
not knowing to be an organ donor. It means you're in an ICU ward and you're on a ventilator because everything has to be keeping warm. But tissue, anybody can give tissue. It could be the corneal off your eyes. It could be some skin cells. Then there's anatomical whole body donation. It's another way of giving back. You give your entire body back. And there's two methods. Anatomical donation, where anything on your body could be used for research or education. The entire body. There's always somebody researching every cell and nerve of the body. That often is a viable option for many families and friends because there is no cost to it. No cost for transportation. And the individual, once they're cremated, 2-3 weeks later, the cremains are returned. Some people opt for donating their bodies to science, to a local hospital that's affiliated with a medical university. Medical schools, generally, at least here in California, if you do what's called a willed body donation, the body is not returned. It permanently belongs to the school. And then they will invite the family for memorials and cremation services, but they don't return anything. And so there's lots of things in the end of life that most people don't have any idea about. They thought they knew, but they really don't. So we try to learn as much as we can, and it's not a big deal to learn this. It's not as daunting as you think. All these websites that I gave you, if you just went to one of them and looked at one of their guides and did the check mark boxes for 3 minutes, you will be so much more informed than where you're at now. You will be able to develop a method that works for you to share with your clients, with your patients. Do you have clients with mental health problems?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it can be a problem if they're not medicated appropriately, if they're not eating appropriately, if they have another illness that's life-threatening and it's clouding their ability to be cognitive. Advanced directives as well as a psychiatric advanced directive. An individual has to be clear-minded to fill it out. Otherwise, there's no use in working with it. So, if you're working with clients through mental or behavioral health, you might want to look at a psychiatric advanced directive. Now, in the state of California, they have never been mandated through legislature. However, most of us that are in the field know about the Laterman-Petras Act. It was authorized years ago through that act. An advanced health care directive for psychiatric advanced health care directive, it could have tons of things in it. Or it could be as simple as your medical advanced directive. You write it in there and say, these are the medications I'm sensitive to. These are the ones I'm allergic to. These are the procedures and things that I don't want done to me. And it's in writing. A little short paragraph, a couple of sentences. It's that simple. You can help your clients and patients walk that path. In the advanced healthcare directive form, we've talked about the agents. We've talked about post-death. And then, what type of medical treatment do you or don't you want? End-of-life decisions. So, here in California, it's very simple. You get two choices. You can add more information, but you get two. I choose to prolong. I choose not to prolong. And then it asks you, under what circumstances? How long do you have to be in a coma before you say that enough is enough? How long do you have to be on artificial respiration or artificial feeding before you go, that's it, I'm tired of being poked up? It is a very personal decision. There is absolutely no right or wrong. Your feelings are your feelings, your values are your values. And so when you start this conversation, you want to make sure that you at least start with a friend, a colleague, someone that is going to be respectful and not say, oh no, you don't want to do that. Don't you want to be buried? You don't want to be cremated. No. You have to start the conversation. My personal experience, my mother was 88 when she passed on hospice. When I was 16 years old, my mother started the conversation with me and my siblings. She says, I don't want you girls putting a lot of money in the ground. Just cremate me. My eldest sister, 14 years older, my second mother. Oh no, Mom. You'll be buried. Everybody in the family's been buried. You're going to be buried. No, just cremate me. At 16, I guess my life started there. Mom, you better put it in writing. You better put it in writing. If she wants to spend $10,000, I'm not going to stop her. But you better put it in writing. Thank God. By the time she retired at age 58, she put it all in writing. And she was cremated according to her wishes. And my sister, she was happy. The cremains, that's what the cremation is called, cremains. And if you're burying a body, it's called interment. If you're burying cremains or putting them in a niche, it's called inurnment. So, our family plot. Grandma, my mom, dad, they pulled up the headstone, put in a concrete vault, put her cremains in, put in a brand new headstone with all three names on it. My sister was fine. She's buried. She's also cremated. Everybody got what they wanted there. Yes.
So if, let's say we have a plot, and we really said, we're just going to be buried. We don't want to be cremated. Mm-hmm. And we change our mind. We have this plot. How many people can go in that plot?
It depends on the cemetery. Some cemeteries you can only put one, and some you can go three. It just depends on the depth, the type of soil, depends on the county and the state standards for the type of cemetery that it is. Because there are different types of cemeteries. Yes, ma'am.
That's max three because I, like, want to conserve the earth.
Well, whether you know it or not, I mean, there's tons and tons of things out there. There are cemeteries now, a lot of them are green cemeteries, where people have a green container and they're not embalmed. There's different types of herbal fluids that are placed around them, just like in biblical days. Mm-hmm. And they are placed in the earth. Some people are cremated, and instead of being in a niche or in an urn in someone's house, you can have cremation jewelry, you can be shot into space with fireworks, you can be put out with a floral wreath out on the water.
Yeah. Now we're talking.
There's big boulders. They look like big boulders with little brass plaques on them. And people are buried inside there. You'd be surprised what modern cemeteries offer nowadays. Some of them have scatter gardens for cremains, where you can go and have a beautiful ceremony, and it's doing this, and there's doves flying, and it's just a very beautiful thing. Some people get planted under their favorite rose bush or their favorite tree in their yard at home. There's a lot of things that can be done. But when you're talking cemeteries, you would have to work with that specific cemetery. And there's tons of cemeteries. There are secular cemeteries. There's religious-affiliated cemeteries. There are fraternal association-affiliated cemeteries. And they all have different practices.
Yes. I have a question to ask. We own all the burial plots out in Port Charles, Louisiana. Mm-hmm. How would we go about, being that we're here in California, like my grandma, she's cremated, Uncle Ronnie got her, but he hasn't put her in the grave out there because apparently her brothers before us, my grandma's brothers, didn't keep up with all the cemeteries. We own the city, but we sold the city. So all we have is the cemeteries, and he's got to go fix them. So I'm like, well, is it just better to... I'm not sitting there saying I don't want to go no time. I got the Lord's work to do. But would it be better to sit there and try to figure out if I want to be buried out there and talk to my family members about it, like my mom and them, or should we just, like, prepare, like, here in California for now?
That's a personal choice.
Oh, really?
A lot of people have family plots or family cemeteries, particularly in the South or the Midwest. Mm-hmm. In the South, it was very common for a very small cemetery to be attached to a church. Yeah. Out in the backyard of the church, and the church may not be there anymore. It may have burnt down 80 years ago.
So take a plane trip.
There are cemeteries that are not endowment, and so you're walking through weeds because individual families have to take care of those plots. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, I just wanted to add something to
okay.
what she was saying, and I didn't know if your family had planned on being cremated and then sit back there. You're planning on a regular funeral back there. Well,
that's a very good question.
Yeah, let me.
I'm looking at this type of thing, and my mom as well, so I don't know.
Let me answer a question. What might answer you is the matter of cost. My mother never wanted to be cremated, but the amount of life insurance that she had, that's about paid for cremation, and then I had the little urn, which looked like a little miniature casket, and drove her way up to Northern California, where we have a cemetery plot, and it accommodates three urns, which my mother's in there now because we cremated her because we had to. It would cost like another couple thousand dollars or something just to ship her up there to the cemetery in Northern California.
Air freight.
So we're talking about air freight, or we're talking about the cost of doing that. So that's what we did, you know.
No, thank you for bringing up, because I'm the oldest in my family. And I told my brothers we need to talk. So my mom has neuropathy. And I'm not sitting there saying she's not going anytime. Well, that's between me and the Lord. But anyways.
But you have to talk to her about what her desires are.
I'm
going
to have to talk to her and find out what she wants. But I know her insurance-wise may not be cost-effective. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that
some
we're going to have to get into.
Some families purchase a separate insurance policy, like a life insurance policy, that will pay for the travel.
Right.
However, you have a time lag when you do that, and I've encountered this working with families, mm-hmm. because the time it takes to get the death certificate and have the burial approved, or to have whatever it is you're going to do, and you have a service in this state, and then you move the body to another state. Mm-hmm. Even with cremains going between countries, there are rules and regulations. Lots of laws. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I have a cousin that lived 30 years in Baja, California. Mm-hmm. She died there. And the place that prepares the bodies was 150 miles away from the community she lived in. So the local mortuary shipped her up there. They drove her up. And the family decided, oh, that's on our way home. We'll just go pick her up. Came right on across the border. She had a plot in California. But legally, she can't be planted in California. They don't have the right paperwork from Mexico. There's a lot to it. So it's good that your family's starting this conversation. There's a lot. But you don't have to stress over it.
Okay.
And then, even though we have our wishes, if we're the ones having to make a decision for an elderly family member, spouse, friend, whoever... Like you said, there's money and time constraints. We do what we can, and we can't feel bad about it. We have to do what we're able to do. Our desire may be to send someone back whole, you know, and that might be the religious tradition, particularly if someone's Islamic or if they're, you know, in the Jewish faith. But we do what we can. We get help from the community. We get help from whoever we can, but we do what we can. And we have to make peace with ourselves about it. So it's good to try to get as much done in advance to know what we're up against. And if it means purchasing some type of an extra policy now to be able to defer some of those costs, it's a good thing. Yes?
Getting off task, not off task, but time-wise. I just wanted to say something with you. Your property is already paid for, but for folks who haven't bought their property and have life insurance, and you have you paid for that in advance or making payments on it. We just purchased ours, the property, and the service package itself. With this neat company, it's like it's Dignity Parks. They're all over the world. Mm-hmm. So even our purchase right here in Montecito, if I move out of state, mm-hmm. I can be buried wherever I move. And we have it where we bought it. We bought it just for myself and my husband, but it can be for five people, two bodies and three urns for
ashes.
That's
pretty cool.
So,
nice.
Yeah. So that is good. If something
you can go anywhere within their network.
If something was to happen to my children, they can be buried there. I don't have to pay extra or make extra arrangements, or you know, put whoever was in my existing family at the time, immediate family at the time we bought that plot, whether it be my child or a grandchild, which I don't have, any of them could have been buried in my spot.
That's good to know.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to get that information.
And that kind of information all your family needs to know. Mm-hmm. So you have to write that stuff down somewhere or use an online service.
They move and they want us
so everybody
to move
knows
us.
Where to find that information.
Exactly. They can move us or put us in another park. I don't have to stay at the park that I purchased my property at.
Oh,
two of the websites that we talked about, the first one was the Conversation Project. This is the kit. So I brought this as a sample that you can download or do it online, and you'll see how simple it is. The other one was the Everplans. This is their workbook and checklist. Looks like a lot of paper. It's very big print. But it really, really is helpful. I brought these as samples. And then I also gave you an individual sheet with some handout here that it lists some books. And you might find these useful for yourself, or you might find them useful to refer to a family member or a friend or a client.
Julie?
Yes?
What direction should a family go if they don't have the resources to bury a loved one or cremate a loved one? I've run into a couple of families in my caseload that they scramble financially to take care of that.
If they're open to cremation, I always recommend whole body donation service. Mm-hmm. There are, on the West Coast here, there are four companies. The one I usually encourage people, the first one is called ScienceCare.com.
Yes.
They operate in a lot of different states. Their corporate's in Phoenix, and they have an educational center here in California. They have a program called HOPE. So if a person is already on hospice and they're clear-minded, takes 10 minutes, phone call, they ask a few social questions. Want to know, have you ever had TB or HIV or, you know, different types of contagious diseases? There's about five of them that most places won't accept. But if they fit in the category, then they will approve and guarantee that within a year, regardless of what happens to that individual, how their health changes, that they will come and get them. They work with local mortuaries. They pay for all the transportation. 2 to 3 weeks, the cremains are ready to come back to the family or whoever the named agent is to do what they want. They can have a service in that meantime while they're waiting for that 2 to 3 weeks. Depending on the faith systems, some individuals that are traditional Roman Catholic, they believe in burial. But because of cost, families can't afford a traditional burial. Even if they could come up with $4,000, $10,000, you have the cost of a plot of land or a niche. You have to figure out what to do. And a lot of people can't afford that. So they cremate, and then they have the cremains there at the Mass, and the Father blesses the
cremains.
And
it's okay.
And it's okay. It is okay. The church is okay with that. Yeah. The church is. But I often encourage that. Now, if a person has had hepatitis C, that's one of the ones that will knock them off of not being able to do that. There are a number of mortuaries that work with very low-income families here in our local area. There are a couple of cemeteries that do set aside a certain number of plots, and they person may get buried without a headstone because the family can't afford $600, $800 for a piece of granite. But there are ways of doing it. It's helpful to talk to the local mortuaries. I can give you some referrals. You just let me know what area the families live in, and I can give you some referrals for that.
Thank you.
Great question.
It is. Any other questions?
So I have a question, what you were telling Ed. Are you talking about that there is a possibility of a person donating their body to the research?
Yes, science,
and
medical
then,
science, and
then
research
they will
education.
Do the cremation?
Yes.
And send it back.
Yes, and it's completely free.
Back.
Mm-hmm. That is one option.
Can you talk about a couple of other options? Because this is so, it happens so frequently. We're constantly seeing car washes and
that's true. And there's some websites now for nonprofits as well as individuals also. I'm sorry I didn't provide that list, but when I email out, I can.
Okay.
Where people can raise money. It's similar to PayPal, but it's specifically for raising money. Some people do it for mission trips. Some people do it, you know, for medical bills or for burial costs. One of the things that you do need to help families understand, a lot of people, particularly if your client is ill, or a patient, they'll say, just let the county deal with it. Let the government, I don't care what they do with me. And they know that they're going to be cremated. And if the county were to approve that, they would go into a mass grave, unmarked grave. However, the county spends a minimum of 30 days trying to find anybody that is legally attached to you.
Yes.
Anyone that might be related to you. It might be that relative you haven't seen for 30 years. But they're going to get their fees one way or another. And unfortunately, that includes being in cold storage in a private mortuary somewhere where they could have been putting a paying client in there. I know these sound like terrible conversations, but we want to kind of normalize this.
Yeah.
We need to have these conversations. It's just, you know, it's the business of end of life. And like I said, all of us have a unique life. We want our end of life to be just as unique. So we want to have some input. We want to do some planning. And even people that have no income, there are ways of getting things done. Sometimes you can't do the negotiation until after they're gone. But if there are family members, nobody gets buried for free. That's all I can say is nobody gets buried for free anywhere, at least not in California. Yes?
Well, I already pay for my cremation plan, but my concern is if I go overseas, if I go over to Germany to see my brother, and I mean, people die anyway.
Just travel insurance, and a lot of travel insurances include if you were to die, that they will pay to ship you back.
So that is purchase the travel insurance.
If I'm just going from here across the country to Florida for family vacation or for a conference, I will purchase some type of travel insurance. It's usually very reasonable.
Okay.
And the majority of them do have some component that if you should die, depends on the circumstances of the death. You know, mm-hmm. if there's war or something, you know, most insurance companies don't want to participate in that.
I always think of it. Traffic accident.
Well, I myself have signed up with a different whole body donation company. I've signed up with one called Life Legacy, also out of Arizona. In the little red envelope that everybody has with my advanced healthcare directives and all my wishes and the list of all the numbers of who to call and all the accounts and everything listed in that little envelope. My daughter, the one in the medical field, she used to be a mortician. She says, Mom, you travel a lot. What if you die out of the country? And that's why I went, oh, the travel insurance. Mm-hmm. I said, but don't pay to bring me back. This is not me. She says, Mom, the other country doesn't want you. If you know you're going to be overseas for a period of time, you might want to, I mean, it's not that important. Everybody figures out eventually what to do. But having some idea and having a conversation with somebody close to you, putting a few things down in writing, will save everybody a lot of heartache and trouble down the road. I want to close with something that I got off the internet. I get a daily meditation from a local mortuary, and they use Grief Connection. This is part of one of the ones that came in this one. I've asked you to do this before, so you can pretend like you're my client. And it's an exercise I often do with hospice clients. I find it very useful. Imagine, what kind of a tree would you be? Can you imagine yourselves as a tree? See the seasons pass, the turning of your leaves, and the renewal of spring. Realize your own power to heal yourself. Your roots go very deep. You can grow. Feel the strength in your roots, which give you the power to withstand any storm. That power grows over time. Most significantly, when we choose to help and shelter others. So as a tree, we can shelter and help protect others. And this session today is giving us a starting point to help us as social workers figure out a way to help ourselves, our family, but most importantly in the future, our community as we help our clients and our patients. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today for NACSW's Podcast of the Month featured selection. We hope you found today's session useful and that it will support your efforts to thoughtfully integrate Christian faith and social work practice. We also hope that you will consider participating in additional NACSW's activities and events, including NACSW's upcoming convention in the fall, our quarterly audio conference workshops that we offer at no cost to NACSW members and which includes free CEUs accredited by the Association of Social Work Boards, our online continuing education program, and access to dozens of archived podcasts from the members section of our website. Also, we invite you to join NACSW's Facebook group or our Facebook fan page. For additional information about these and other NACSW benefits and services, you can go to our website at www.nacsw.org. Thanks again for listening in today to our podcast session today.